recording.
Don't create a new category. We're dealing with military personnel. The father deputy minister has one of his own obligations and responsibilities under this ministry. So he is going to give us a sense, and we have had the medium term, and we all be listening to him. Good morning, Deputy Minister.
Morning, Deputy.
We should be really feeling welcome there. This is your day. How long ago it all depends on you. And with the full responsibility, we will give you as much time to explain all the work that you have done. For us to have a task, then you should not just be enough. You should be knowing that Deputy Minister, this type of information would go to the public because of the media presence and all those things. So we'll give you that opportunity to explain to them what you want. Yes, now I'm sorry. Okay, sir. Look, I am. No, this time I was just whispering to you. Yes. Okay, good morning, Duman. How are you? Very fine. Sorry, sir, to see you. That's a story, you're okay. I did greet the media people. How are you? Terrible? Are you fine? I'll give over to you, Deputy Minister, to start the process. Brilliant. You will soon get back to
me. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, we are here as the task team that the minister established after assumption of office to assist her in establishing in government an organization that will ensure that government provides support to military veterans. Allow me to introduce members of the task team who are here. Not all of them are here. A few were requested to make themselves available. We have present the Mr. Keith Mukwabe. If you would just raise your hand there, that's right. Thank you very much. Who is a member of the task team, but Mr. Keith Mukwabe is also the chair of the Army Reserve. The Army Reserve is not the chief. He's the chief of the Army Reserve. But he's also a member of the committee. The minister appointed him to the committee because of, among his credentials, wide and broad exposure and familiarity with the military matters. Next to him, it's a person who you interact with regularly as a committee. It's General Mukwevi. General Mukwevi is a member of the task team. In the Department of Defense, General Mukwevi is the head of human resource policy. Across, next to General Mukwevi, is Colonel Giles. Colonel Giles is the second vice president of SANFA, the South African National Military Veterans Association. Next to him is Mr. Naidoo, attached to the task team, an official within the Policy and Planning Division within the department. He's attached to the committee to assist the committee. But let me go back again to members of the committee, of the task team. At the back, the next row, we have the first vice president president of SANFA, of the South African National Military Veterans Association, a retired General Fischer, who not so long ago was actually a serving general. Next to him is the advisor to the minister that you interact with and you have been interacting with for very many years, those who have been in the benches of parliament in the past. Advisor to the minister, Mr. Tsu Rapkin, who is also a member of the committee. The minister requested that she serves on the committee as well. We have the head of the ministry that you know, Ms. Ellen Molekane, at the back there. You work with her now and again as the committee because she's the one who conveys all the interests and matters that the committee wants the ministry to attend to or to address. Next to him is Ndime Skosana, the media liaison person and parliamentary officer in the deputy minister's office. At the back there is Mr. Ratsomo. Mr. Ratsomo is in the ministry, and at the moment he has been asked by the minister to head the deputy minister's office, but it is a temporary, you know, assignment. As you know, he's been in charge of the ministry before. I think those are the people that the gentleman next to Ratsomo, I am not sure if he is part of the ministry's delegation. He is, I'm told. The DG will introduce him. Ellen?
That is Mr. Tarn Sikirete, who has just recently joined us. I think he's today to the ministry. That's why he's going to join him.
Okay. Welcome. Yes, colleague. Chairperson, honorable members, these the colleagues who have accompanied me to make this presentation today to the committee, the portfolio committee. I've had a discussion with the chairperson of the committee and the minister to establish the appropriateness of this briefing, because as the members will be aware, the task team that is reporting here is a task team that the minister established to advise her. The work that we have been seized with was for its intended to advise the minister. So the product was generated to be presented to the minister. In that context, what we are doing is in a way extraordinary, but we established the wisdom of us doing that in my discussion with the chairperson of the committee and the minister as well, because the issue or the matter that this task team is dealing with is indeed a matter of immense public interest, but also for purposes of the committee's duties, it is also an important urgent matter. So we said that even before we present to the minister the final product, we should bring the portfolio committee in the loop to make the committee aware of just how far we have gone. That is the purpose of the meeting, and to indicate to the portfolio committee the issues that are emerging in that work. So that where the committee deems fit, we can benefit from views and advice from the committee. In our presentation, we'll cover the background, the problem statement of the issue we are dealing with. We'll give indication of what the state of affairs is as far as military veterans are concerned. Will indicate the process methodology employed to generating this product. Will also deal with concrete factors that are going to impact on this policy, and will give the committee an indication of what are the content issues, and of course provide some concluding remarks. The committee chairperson, just to start with, would recall that after the elections, upon assumption of office by the president, the president decided that the executive will have a portfolio of defense and military veterans. That was the decision of the president when he established the new portfolios in the executive. Once the president had made that determination, it was the responsibility for the minister to see how the new portfolio of defense and military veterans is going to function. The minister then established a task team, which he announced during the budget vote speech, to assist with respect to the terms of reference in coming up with policy recommendations regarding the support that must be provided to military veterans by government, but secondly, recommendations about how that support will be delivered by government, meaning the institutional arrangement that will be established in government in order to roll out the policy of the support to military veterans. Of course, when the committee met, it also came to a realization that it is wise that in its terms of reference, it should also include an evaluation of the status quo. It must take stock of the support in government that has been there, limited as it may have been before, in order for whatever recommendations that it comes up with to be informed by that experience in government with respect to the limited support that was provided. And also to make sure that there is no confusion that leads to things that were happening in government to support the military veterans being discontinued because the minister has established a task team to make sure that whatever that was happening as far as support is concerned continues until the task team tables the recommendations to the minister. The other members, just with respect to the composition of the committee, the other members are, as you can see there, the sector is part of the committee. General Fitt has mentioned him. The president of SANVA, the South African National Military Veterans Association, Mr. K.B. Mapatswe, is also a member of the committee. Mr. Tony Engeni, Dr. Tandin Zovu, Mr. Lidebe Maisena, Mr. Tisha Makhavo, Lieutenant Colonel Giles has mentioned him. Mr. L.J. Baez is also a member of the committee. General Mukwebe here. We've got also General Mashwala, who is a member of the committee. Mr. Lamin, who is the administrator of the SANVA, is also a member of the committee. Mr. Surapkin and Mr. Supriman, who is an official in the department in the section that deals with the work study matters. That is the composition of the committee. Now, with respect to the problem statement, the way the committee went about, the task team went about evaluating this matter. Firstly, to say that the demobilization process, or let me say the integration that happened following the 1994 negotiated settlement led, as the committee is aware, to the amalgamation of all the military organizations, statutory and non-statutory, and we ended up with a force level of about 120,000. It was a decision of the Defense Department that there must be demobilization as a result of the high force levels that we ended up with as a result of integration. The demobilization process necessarily implies that the Department of Defense will be releasing and laying off people who do not have skills for normal survival to assist them to be able to eat a living. There was also the issue that the cadres that were being released, or rather the soldiers that were being demobilized, should also be provided with the support to be integrated into civilian life by providing them with skills. And the other consideration, of course, with respect to the establishing of support for military veterans was to make sure that there is overall welfare for this constituency. Lastly, to also say that the military veterans of all the military organizations that were involved in the recent conflict in our country are people who are a resource for assisting our country in promoting nation building, because they are individuals who themselves were at the coalface of the conflict of the past. This is what the committee established to be the real issue that this matter is seeking to address. Now, previously, or let me say, as we speak, there are things that have been going on to support military veterans, and these efforts are found in law. There is legislation that speaks to support to military veterans, and among the pieces of legislation that we have that speaks to support to military veterans, the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999 is one such legislation, the Special Pensions Act of 1996, the Social Assistance Act of 2004, the National Heritage Resources Act of 1999, the Housing Act of 1997, the Transitional Executive Council Act of 1993, the National Health Act, and the Military Pensions Act of 1976. All of these acts invariably contain in them sections that speaks to military veterans, support to military veterans, from different angles and in the context of the objectives of those legislations. So support for military veterans, therefore, is an undertaking in government that has been fragmented because of these many pieces of legislation that deals with military veterans. And it would be support in the context of the main objectives of these different legislations, not the support that is provided comprehensively in the manner in which the minister is seeking to do now. This support, of course, is to be given to, or was given to, people who were on the CPR list, which is the Certified Personnel Register. The 35 personnel register is a list of names of people who all the military organizations that were part of the integration process had submitted and were officially signed off before the passing of the new constitution in December 1996. All of the people who were on the CPR list by December 1996 were considered to be military veterans deserving of this support. The issue of the CPR list is a matter which the committee will appreciate that constitute a source of serious tension, because there are people who believe, rightfully so, that they should be on the, their names should have been on the CPR list for one reason or another. They are not on the CPR list and therefore not there receiving the support. So the consolidation of the CPR list, it's one of the major work that the ministry is going to have to deal with as part of the new interventions in assisting this constituency. With respect to support, as far as what has been going on, members are aware that the special pensions that this constituency, a section or a fraction of this constituency has been getting special pensions, but also there are programs and projects, limited as they may be, that were embarked upon by the Department of Defense and other departments in government to assist military veterans. And among those, we have, for instance, the Service Corps. There was a Service Corps that was established by the Department of Defense that was to provide skills to members of the Defense Force who were being demobilized or who were leaving the service. In some provinces and in some municipalities, housing programs have, to a limited extent, assisted military veterans with housing. There were houses built for military veterans as well. Members will also be aware that with respect to recognition of service, you know, rendered and honor was also undertaken by the Department of Defense with the issuing of medals to military veterans who had since moved on, but that were part of the non-statutory forces before and were involved in the liberation struggle. There were medals that the department issued out, and the former Deputy Minister of Defense, Mr. Ronnie Castles, as the members may recall, was responsible for that project. With respect to structures, the department has been doing these limited interventions that I am referring to through a directorate within the Department of Defense. There was a directorate for military veterans, and it is a directorate that was established following the passing of the 1999 Military Veterans Act, without any extensive budget or serious budget to talk about. They were able to do the things that the government has done so far. In different provinces, there are a number of projects that were embarked upon to create work opportunities for military veterans, for an example. There was, as a result of the Military Veterans Act, of 1999 again, the department assisted in establishing a National Military Veterans Association that was an amalgamation of all military veterans. environment as we speak, as far as military veterans, if I may say so. To move on, when the task team started its work, the starting point firstly was to say that there will be a desktop study of experience of other countries where there is support in government for military veterans. And that desktop study included, among others, those countries that you see there, the United States of America, Canada, Germany, Rwanda, Angola, Uganda, and the People's Republic of China. The mix of the countries that were dealt with in the desktop study include countries, as you can see, U.S., United States, Canada, and Germany, that are developed countries and countries where support for military veterans, it's support for military veterans as in a conventional sense of support to people who were served in military establishments as soldiers and after that moved on in life. So it is conventional, it's a conventional program of dealing with people who retire after military service. The other group of countries that were isolated are countries in the developing world, countries that you can say governments there in those countries were dealing with the problems of post-conflict and among others the need to support the war veterans or military veterans that were involved in those conflicts. Rwanda, Angola, Uganda would give a sense of the kind of experience that those countries have. The information that was collated, the task team was assisted by the United Nations literature from the research conducted of support for military veterans in these post-conflict countries. The task team also, after doing the desktop study, agreed that there should be interaction with line function departments that provide services that which military veterans need. Treasury is one of the departments that was interacted with because Treasury is responsible for pensions, the Department of Human Settlements, the issue of housing, the Department of Social Development. These are the departments that were interacted with on a one-on-one in order to establish what in government presently is happening for military veterans and what is possible and what is the best way that support can be delivered. There was also an agreement that we should conduct visits to verify the information that we're able to glean from our desktop studies. And the visits that we have conducted were to the United States and Algeria. Why the United States? From the desktop study conducted, it was very clear in that the United States presented in the continuum of the most comprehensive to the most elementary support that government provides to military veterans. America is on the extreme end of that continuum as representing the most comprehensive support for military veterans, the most extensive support for military veterans, the most resourced support for military veterans. And that is why we isolated the United States for purposes of establishing the veracity of Nigeria also with respect to developing countries where and post-conflict countries, Algeria presents one of the best examples of support and comprehensive support for military veterans. The committee has been meeting just to say that there's been continuous work because of the time pressures we have. The committee has had to meet on a weekly basis every Friday in order to push as much as we can to meet the timeline that the minister set for this work. Just before we go into the content issues of this policy, may I just indicate that to the committee, that committee members, that support for military veterans in policy is an undertaking which has a context to it. There is a context. That policy is a policy that is impacted upon by several very concrete realities. It's a policy that cannot be formulated outside of certain considerations, and among these considerations are the list that you have there. The first reality that this policy has to be crafted in line with, or taking that the policy must take into account, is the fact that military veterans that in South Africa we are talking about are the former Liberation Army's members, freedom fighters, but also military veterans that we are talking about. We are talking about conventional military veterans, soldiers who were in the statutory forces. There is a need to appreciate that much as the two categories are generally referred to as military veterans, we are actually talking about two constituencies with different backgrounds, backgrounds that speaks to the kind of needs they have. So there is that tension that needs to be harmonized in the policy that we must come up with to deal with the needs of military of freedom fighters, and at the same time deal with the problem military veterans present conventionally, things being equal. And therefore, leading us to the next point, the second bullet, which is that the problem of freedom fighters, the needs of freedom fighters, is an immediate problem, and is a problem that will not be there into the future. However, the problem of military, conventional military veterans is a problem that is going to be there for all times, for as long as we have the defense force, the military. And therefore, the policy in crafting it is going to be a policy that is able to deal with the problem in the immediate term, but also the problem in the long term. The other matter, of course, is that in crafting this policy for military veterans, we cannot do it without aligning it with the human resource policy of the personnel of the Department of Defense in its entirety that is in service. Policy for military veterans, for support for military veterans, meaning support for people who have moved or who have exited the establishment, cannot be crafted outside of policy that the department has for those who are still in service. Policy in service must be aligned with policy after service. Actually, the whole point really is that the policy, the human resource policy from the point of recruitment that the Defense Force has, must be consistent and be aligned with what policy the department has when the people are saving and also when they have served after. From cradle to grave, basically that is the point. Policy must be able to comprehensively address the needs of these citizens that come into this unique environment that we are talking about. The other point, of course, is that as support for a constituency that is challenged, a constituency that has people who are destitute as we speak now, this policy is therefore very much part of the anti-poverty broad strategy of government to cushion those who are materially more disadvantaged. And therefore, in crafting this policy, it has to speak to the overall strategy of the support that government provides to citizens with respect to social security. We cannot come up with policy that does not relate to the broader social support, social network that government provides to the rest of the citizenry. There has to be some correlation because there is a need to make sure that that policy must not dictate support that is below what government provides to its indigent populace, and we know all policies in government that are assisting the indigent. But at the same time, the policy for military veterans should not be too much about the broad social security network policies strategy that is there in government. There must be some correlation. That is another, important, context that must be taken into account. And lastly, of course, there must be a means test principle as part of the approach to the support that the policy will say we must give to military veterans, meaning that the degree of need must be established on an individual basis. It should not be a one-size-fits-all, simply because people were soldiers before. When they move on, they are no longer soldiers. They are entitled to same and all of the support that government provides to soldiers, because people will always be at different levels of need, at different levels of being, challenged with respect to their socio-economic conditions. Coming to the policy itself, policy, the objectives of policy. The first objective of this policy, the way the task team understands it, is that the policy must seek to honor and serve veterans in life and memorialize them in death for their sacrifices on behalf of the nation. The policy must ensure a smooth and seamless transition for veterans from active military service to civilian life. It must also restore the capability of veterans with disabilities to the greatest extent possible and improve the quality of their lives and that of their families. The policy must provide a comprehensive delivery system of services and benefits for military veterans. It must contribute towards reconciliation and nation building, and also it must enhance the skills levels of the country. It must contribute to the national workforce. Honorable members, the first challenge that this policy must address is the definition of beneficiaries. Who are the people to benefit from this support that government is going to be providing to military veterans? It is a matter that is going to require very intense inputs. Very intense inputs some of the things that we may not immediately find common ground on. What the task team has relied on in defining beneficiaries, it leaned on the definition that was provided by the 1999 Military Veterans Act, and sought to capture the definition as stipulated there on the slide, that these military veterans would be South African citizens who have served before 1994 in military formations on both sides of the conflict during the liberation struggle, meaning statutory and non-statutory forces, and all those who have since retired after serving in the former SADF and were honorably discharged. So it talks about all military veterans that the SANDF, you know, had, from those who fought in the First World War, the Second War, the Korean War, they are also included there. But all these people, what is important is that they've got to be South Africans. And also the people who benefit will not only be the principal members themselves, but that their dependents will also, you know, benefit. And with respect to the definition of dependents, that's what we have there. A dependent of a military veteran refers to a spouse, widower, widow, life partner or child of the military veteran, or anyone who is legally dependent on the military veteran for support and maintenance, and who complies with the requirements and conditions which may be prescribed in law. The dependents will constitute the part of the population of beneficiaries. There are issues of eligibility. As I said earlier on, that this support has to be provided on the basis of an individual's needs. So, with respect to eligibility, the principle of a means test should apply for each support service or benefit separately. For an example, if the policy says military veterans will be assisted with pension, there must be a means test of economic need established strictly just for pensions, to say a person who does not hold a job or a person who has an income below a stipulated amount gets a pension, meaning that a person who has income above that stipulated level may be a military veteran but will not be entitled to pension. So it means that pension will have its own means test. Whether a person gets pension or does not get pension does not mean that he is not entitled to the other support. For instance, a person may, according to the means test, not get pension but be entitled to get educational support, or be entitled to get health support, or be entitled to have housing. Or a person may be entitled, according to the means test for housing, be entitled to have a house but not be entitled to have, you know, other support. Meaning, the point really is that there should be a means test for each support that government, this policy says military veterans must get. The other important message is that the policy benefits must be on a cascading scale of priority, taking into account the degree of involvement of the person, e.g., the length of jail term an individual has served, or disability incurred in the execution of the struggle duties. If I may just explain this point, is that with respect to legibility, that the extent to which individuals have been disadvantaged or were compromised by their involvement in the struggle must determine the degree to which they are then entitled to support. If I may give an example, if a person has served, you'll pardon me, Honorable Member Mlangeni, Dr. Mlangeni, if a person has served a life sentence and ended up spending 27 years in jail, like the veteran here, Dr. Mlangeni, the support that he gets entitled to cannot be the same support that the Deputy Minister, Thabang Makgwetla, is entitled to, who has served 6 months in that struggle. So, because the extent to which we are disadvantaged by that is different, our needs will not necessarily be the same. That is to give an example of what the policy in principle must build into it. There must be a cascading scale of entitlement that is influenced by the degree of this involvement as I've tried to explain it. And of course... And of course, the ministers will still trigger in. They'll say, "You are a member of parliament, you earn so much, you're not entitled to anything." That is on a light note there, Dr. Mlangeni. But the other, of course, consideration that will be built into the policy in determining eligibility is disability incurred as a result or in the execution of duties. If there is a person who, for some, I mean, for an example, who is disabled, who lost limbs in the execution of work, and who therefore cannot do so many things, that person in the entitlement to support cannot be the same as the chairperson, Nyameze Dipoi, who has been involved in that struggle, but he still has all his limbs, he's still health-wise, you know, physically fit. There must be a consideration of the degree of disadvantaging that the person ended up in caring as a result of the execution of duties in the struggle. That is on eligibility. If I may just move on to the policy content issues themselves with respect to benefits. Among issues that were identified as desirable support benefits-wise, it's pensions, housing, health, burials and memorials, education and training, facilitation of job placements, transport, compensation, business opportunities, and there may be other benefits which in discussion may be proposed. I'm saying in discussion because we, after this briefing, the next undertaking in our process of consultation is a stakeholders forum. The stakeholders that are going to be invited in the meeting that in the workshop that is taking place on Friday include, among others, military veterans associations themselves, policy institutes, departments of government that align function delivery you know, mechanisms in government. In that discussion, there will be a fine-tuning of these benefits, and there may be others which people may argue strongly that they should be included. But for now, these are the ones that the task team has ascertained that must be part of policy. Lastly, Chairperson and Honourable Members, with respect to content issues, there is the question of the macro institutions that the task team believes we must have playing different roles in order to bring policy into life, in order to make sure that this support to military veterans is realized and is delivered. Now, for starters, the first institution at a macro level that the country believes we must have is a separate department in government. And this matter, of course, it's a matter which in principle has been determined to be desirable by the minister, that within the Department of Defense, the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans, support for military veterans must be provided for through a separate vote. Through a separate vote with its own accounting officer reporting to the minister. That is a determination that the minister has done. But what we're going to have to look into is to look at how that department, that both as an organization within the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans, is going to deliver this service, this support to military veterans. How much of this support will be done directly by the department itself, and how much of this support will be provided by the other life function departments of government, meaning which are the issues that this department will coordinate, support that will coordinate, and which support will it deliver directly itself. Those are permutations that must still be looked into. Away from government, the department within the ministry, there is the appeals board, that one of the organizations that must be in place is an appeals board that will serve as a recourse for those applicants whose cases have been turned down for one reason or another by the Department of Military Veterans, so that those decisions can be subjected to review by the appeals board. People can have recourse in that way. And this, we believe, would be very helpful, because even as we speak, there are many people who believe they must be on the CPR list. They are not on the CPR list, and they've been turned down for reasons that they are not satisfied with. Therefore, it means that all of that population, all of those people, we can have their cases referred to this appeal spot. The other institutional organization that the task team believes is necessary is an advisory council, a body of people who would be put together by the ministry to advise the minister on the policy, and also not just policy, but the efficiency and of delivery of the support to military veterans. An advisory council must be established for that. Of course, the other matter is that the other institutions that we need for delivery services is the veterans organizations. Veterans organizations, as you are aware, we have already amalgamated under one umbrella those that are existing now into SANFA, the South African National Military Veterans Association. The department assisted with the amalgamation of these existing military veterans association because it believed it would make things easy for the department to communicate this with the affected individuals easily, but also it will be able to get inputs that are consolidated and are harmonized coming from one center. That is an institution and organization that the environment is going to require at all times. Because we are talking, when we talk of military veterans organizations, we are talking about really organs of civil society, it is still possible that these organs of civil society may present themselves in different organizational forms into the future. It will be, of course, a matter that depends on what the affected people, individuals themselves, decide to do. The soldiers, when they leave the defense force, what they decide. If they decide to form other organizations for one reason or another, I would imagine that it will be left to be seen how it would pan out. In conclusion, Chairperson and honorable members, the task team would want the committee to be aware that these recommendations must be viewed as recommendations to provide a preliminary framework for the Department of Defense and military veterans, a preliminary framework to provide the support. But secondly, that they would want honorable members to be aware that the further refinement must be undertaken upon conclusion of further investigations and research, meaning further refinement of this structure, of this framework, the further improving of this framework, of this policy, should happen upon further investigations that must be conducted and research work that must be done. Because in 3 months, it is not possible that we have had. It is not possible to come up with comprehensive solutions to a problem of this nature. This is intended to assist in the interim, but there must be further investigation of some of the problems, challenges, which as we speak now, we may not be aware that military veterans face, and government will then later on would have to refine this policy. And lastly, to say that a team to align the South African National Defense Force human resource policy for members during service and after service must be put together by the ministry. Because as I said earlier on, into the future, the policy that speaks to support for military veterans is going to be policy that deals with the people who the department, when they are still in service, these people, is able to structure their remuneration in particular ways that it also addresses their situation after they have left the defense force. So there is a need for some work to be done to align the policy for military veterans and the policy of the department for members when they are still serving. So that it should be one package. Chairperson, honorable members, when the president took a decision to say they are citizens that the country aware that the country is obligated to make itself relevant to their conditions, to their challenges, to their problems in life, because of things that they have done for this country, and that it is politically not permissible that there should be such neglect. That concern was not only speaking to people who fought for our democracy in boots and uniform, who were soldiers. There are many South Africans who fought for our democracy, and because of their committed, uninterrupted, continuous involvement in that work, in the fight for democracy, they are just as destitute as those who were in uniform that we are speaking about. This task team's mandate was not to address that section of veterans, of activists of the struggle for democracy, or the struggle against apartheid. This task team was to deal with military veterans. However, it became clear in our discussions that the intervention in government to look after those that were in uniform is going to accentuate, it is going to make those who are not in uniform's condition to actually stick out like a sore thumb and to become a very caring omission by government with respect to lack of support for them. We want to, as a task team, advise that there be a footnote in our report that says government must look into that problem and advise how those veterans of the struggle against apartheid who were not in boots and uniform, some of them getting the special assistance now to a limited extent through the special pensions, but who would say they equally deserve assistance if we're talking about housing? Who would say they equally deserve assistance with respect to education of their children, their health, and so on? That those governments must look into how and where in government they will be assisted, whether it's social welfare, but that there must be a dedicated organization in government that deals with that problem, and that there are dedicated resources, or resources topped up. There's a topping up of resources that presently government has set aside for those people. The special pensions, there must be, you know, additional, you know, resources released, so that we should not look after those who were in uniform to the infant of those who are not in uniform, who are just as deserving of our support. Thank you very much.
So let's first thank the Deputy Minister. The information has really parted with the doesn't sound as if it was only 3 months. It gives us quite a lot for us to chew from and be able to give direction on issues. But I want members also to recognize what he says. It's a preliminary report. It's not a conclusive one. And then second to that, there is an expectation from his side and the team that he's working with. You can sit together there. I don't think you're fighting. Or is SAPC fighting with newspapers? Yeah. I can see now what's going on. Keep on saying that you fight and you are fighting. Good morning, Mr. Tan, and good morning for the good work that you're doing. So we should have our own expectations. And I do like you to take note of the footnote that he has made now, because if you deal with issues of what we, in the Port Elizabeth area, they will talk of the Amabut, or if you talk here in the Western Cape of the 80 generation, some of those people who have made their own contribution might not be covered by your own definition. You have to reflect on that. But I'll give over to you members to engage. And I do hope at some stage also that the Deputy Minister, you take note of the issues of them, how does they get integrated into the local. They remain white, you know. I might take note that some women might not have played active roles like being in voters. But what do we do? How do we make them to be part of the process? I'll leave that one thing to you all as members are asking questions. Just think about it, Deputy Minister. But they've done a very good job over these 2 months, and I do hope you continue with the good work. I still want to congratulate and say to everybody, good morning, ma'am. You nearly slept here. You must not sleep here. You did. But thanks for coming over and listening to the presentation of the Deputy Minister. Honorable members, I'll give you the opportunity to ask questions. The first person to go will be Tatu Mlangeni, comes David Maymir, comes Lorimer, comes Tatu Toy. That's how my lineup is.
Thank you, Common Chairman. I honestly want to congratulate this trustee of men and women led by our Deputy Minister. I think in the short period of time since you've been established, this kind of work you've done here is absolutely marvelous in this short period of time. Very good indeed. I don't think anybody could have done better than yourself. The intentions enumerated here in this presentation, here, are very good. We as South Africans and the South African government and parliament are always very good, you know, in our policies and our legislation. But where we are weak is in the implementation of our legislation, in our policies. This is a huge task, which will require huge funding from the government and from whatever other sources may contribute to this task with which you are faced, all of us. I don't know whether the funds, the funding we'll get from government sufficient, taking into consideration the present economic position of the country and the world all over. Hopefully, legislation will be passed which will enable this work to proceed. Hopefully it will probably start working as from next year, the next financial year, and not immediately. Funding will be required. The question I want to ask the minister is, are you planning to introduce a veterans bill to effect the restructuring in order to meet the needs of multi-veterans? How soon can that legislation, if you are planning to introduce it, how soon do you think it will come before Parliament? I don't want to waste our time here, but I want once more to congratulate the chairperson for the wonderful work you've done. lot of questions that will arise that we will ask later on when this whole thing has been refined. And for the time being, I rest my case. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask three sets of questions covering definitions, existing data, and then the budget. Let me start with the first question, Deputy Minister. I was pleased in your presentation that it is the view of your task team that there be what I understand to be an inclusive definition of military veterans, which would, for example, include World War II veterans. Now, I raised that because I received some time ago a letter from a gentleman born in 1926 who lives in a retirement village in Buitenzorg, Cape Town, where he says that he is finding it extremely difficult and trying living on what he calls his war veteran pension. He joined the South African Air Force and saw service in North Africa, where he said in his letter, many lives were lost by us from East Africa to the Western Desert. Black, white, and brown South Africans paid a bitter price. And then he goes on to say that he feels very strongly about what he calls the gross unfairness of my so-called war veterans pension compared to current payouts and privileges. My question to you is, can I write back to this gentleman and say that the current thinking, which is preliminary, of your task team is that he will receive a pension equal to that of other, or he can expect to receive a pension equal to that of other military veterans, subject, of course, to means tests? That's the first question. The second question is, what I thought was missing from your presentation was existing data about the existing what you call status quo. My question to you is, how many military veterans or war veterans are there in South Africa? What benefits do they receive and at what cost? And how much does that cost South Africa in any one financial year? Then coming to a question that that the Honourable Hlangeni raised, you are formulating policies, and as he said, there are great intentions, but what about the budget? My question to you is, how much money has been set aside in the Department of Defense's budget over the next three financial years for military veterans? Thank you, Chair. I have other questions, but I'll leave it at those three.
We definitely have some time to come back. Let's go now.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The certified personnel register. I'd be interested to know, Minister, how you envisage the process working. Will that certified personnel register be added to solely through the appeals board? We need to know how the military will go about this task, what criteria they will use to decide who gets onto that list. My second question is regards the benefits on a cascading scale of priority. I'd like to know how you would envisage that scale being decided. Will it be codified? Will there be a list, or will it be approached on a case-by-case basis? And thirdly, just some clarification of my understanding of the equality of this process. Once you are on that certified personnel register, it's my understanding then that everybody will be treated equally. Is that correct?
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. You know, I think the announcement of President to this team of military veterans, some of us were stressed to choose because I'm telling you. And I think, Comrade Chairperson, you know it better than me. There were some other comrade here in Western Cape, I think it was 4, 5, 6 years back, that chap, he was a member of MK. And the tax organization, they will use him to, you know, shoot to get something. It's painful. It was painful. I think that chef is still in prison, if I'm not mistaken. That's right. You see, it's terrible. If we are not looking after these people, we are here because them, all of us here. Some of them, they are dying, all those things. And you see, when you go down there, we saw many comrades there, the MK, they are poor. You know, you can see poor drinking alcohol day and night. She don't even know what she must do, or he. Now, this thing, Chairperson, is very important. And this chair also must look into that man in Western Cape. I'm not sure he got children or wife, I'm not sure, but that also we must look into. Because in my language study, on the Bible says, otherwise that chap, he was an angry man and somebody sinned us. But we must do that announcement is very, very important, Chairperson. But now, another question, Comrade Chairperson, to Comrade Minister. You know, I'm not sure, when always we are talking about gender equality, we are talking about women, I'm not sure it's just political score. Because if you look on this committee, it's just one woman. 15 is a man, I'm not sure, because I say Miss S.R. Zapkin. I'm not sure. 15 is a man. I'm not sure this thing always, I say, woman, my gender equality, 50-50, is just looking a political score, I'm not sure. And if it's not political score, why is just one woman? I think, Comrade Minister, this one you must, we must solve this mistake. On page 10, to contribute to one's reconciliation and nation building. You know, I remember one day I saw in TV, there were a group of MK, the former MK member. They were saying, we will make a Western Cape ungovernable. And these people, according to me, they are very important people to us, for us, you see. But when there is an intimidation, that also we must look into. Because we are saying this thing is very good and we support them 100%. But the problem is that when we support our freedom fighters, but at the same time, the intimidation to say we will make Western Cape ungovernable. That also, Minister, we must look into. Another thing, Comrade Minister, you know, there is some other people we can see. This thing of freedom fighters, we know, all of us. But there is some other that are not freedom fighters. That is new. We know. When you walk in the corridor, or every corner, after one second, say, I'm MK. I'm MK.
Sorry, why are you pointing at Tanda? And you presenting yourself as a...
No.
Tanda, don't do this. So you keep on making yourself a freedom fighter. And I'm not sure about your
credentials. Yes. You know, in the corner, every 1 second, I'm an MK member. We fought for this government. I'm an MK member. And you know this man, or this man, he was not an MK. We know. You know, all of us, you know, I came from Limpopo. I know Thabo Makwetla. It was a freedom fighter. I know. One day somebody was saying to me, Thabo Makwetla, just I forgot, in Botswana somewhere there, they say was taking arms in his shoulder more than half time, walk for 60 kilo. They would say that. I'm not just talking, saying, I didn't see him, but they were telling me, walk for 60 kilo to come through inside in South Africa. But some people that say, no, I'm MK, freedom fighter. And we know you are not the MK. No, you're not. You know, that also we must look. The point raised from my colleague here next to me to say the number of freedom fighters. We must get it in black and white. Because if everybody just say I'm a freedom fighter, we know you are not a freedom fighter. We queen with us. Then we can see this one is not right, this one is okay. This one, no, 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 you mustn't put it on that list. And another thing you show about Adam Lange for life sentence in prison. Yeah, some people, they went there for 2 months, some 8 years. So when they come back, they say, we're freedom fighters. All of us here, we're fighting against the power party. All of us, we're fighting about them. It's not to say, if you've been in prison, or maybe if you are in the exile, which means you're better than us. All of us, we're fighting. But I'm not saying we must benefit as a military veteran. No, I'm not saying that. We know our military veterans. That is very, very important. I think, Chairperson, this thing, we are so hit. As a Congress of the People, a member, we support this thing very, very, very good. We must make sure to this thing go on and so on. I'm not sure. In another question, but I still have another other question. But I'm going to stop. You know the way Botswana, Transkei, Venda, and Ciskei. Also the way. I'm not sure about those. People also, if they are included on these military veterans, which means we must also get in black and white the number of them. How many of Venda, how many of Botswana, Botswana, Ciskei, and Transkei, also you must see in the number. Then we can satisfy. Thank you very much, Chairman.
You have a question?
No, I was going for the second round.
Minister says he's still patient.
Oh.
You give up yourself, other people. Chairperson, you can respond.
I can respond. That's right.
I'm a map better. No, it's just I think while I'm a map better. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the Deputy Minister with this presentation. I want also to align myself to Mr. Dolo that this is the second tax team from this Department of Defense, which is overlooking the women. So I want the Deputy Minister to take note of that. Even the Commissioner tax team was not having females, now even this one. So it is on a serious note, Deputy Minister. My question, Deputy Minister, is on page 10. According to the presentation, everybody, we know that when we speak about the military veterans, we are speaking about the, or we are playing with the emotions of the people there outside. Now, looking at this draft policies, taking from point one up to the last point, to honor and serve veterans in life, and to enhance the national workforce. I want to know from you, Deputy Minister, do you have capacity and the mechanism to speed up this process? Because people outside there, from the Polokwane Resolution and the State of National Address of the President, they are still looking. Thank you for the time that you have spent. Thank you for the good work within this time frame. But we are still looking forward. Is how best and how quick this can be implemented, because it is the soul of our brothers and sisters that outside. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you for the questions. I'm going to invite the members of the task team, those who want to respond to some of the questions, to do so, to assist, share information, and I can deal with the whatever remains after. General Mokwape?
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Would you mind if I take any one of them?
Yes.
At random. Thank
yes.
you. I would like to assure Honorable Dolo that when we were talking about all military veterans, statutory, non-statutory, definitely we're including members of the TBBC. And equally, we also are aware that even though those of the statutory forces may have contributed a certain amount of their pay to pension and might have got benefits because they were informal employed, as military people, they may not have had the skills to survive once outside the system. And although, therefore, plight now is evident about ex-MK, ex-APLA, the Liberation Movement forces, it is our responsibility to go and search and look as we update the data and bring the database to speed, to look at those who are generally destitute. We know that people are selling their skills to the highest bidder, some in crime, they have some working for other forces outside the country, Afghanistan, or whatever. We want to bring all South Africans of a military background into the system and ensure that, of course, using means tests, then we can everybody.
Thank you, General Mkwafe. We've got generals here. General Mkwafe, General Fisher, can you make your impact first as generals?
Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Chair. Well, I will look at the question of the database and try to respond to the question which says how many and what benefits are there as we speak and the cost involved. The challenge with us is that it was indicated that there is a directorate military veterans which is there. Unfortunately, the challenge is that the structuring of that military veterans directorate and the funding to be able to deal with the database and have a database which is credible, we've been struggling. And two, this is one of the reasons why we went the route of trying to assist the association, because you were speaking to a number of associations. Then we assisted them to come up with one National Military Veterans Association to assist us to make sure that database is properly populated. Roughly, if one now would be going to the figures which are there, we're in the vicinity of about 20,000 in terms of that. It's a number of challenges in terms of the address, whether people are still alive, and again, the years of service. So we're working on that database to improve it. In terms of the benefits of the members, what they receive now is that special pension, which is not necessarily a DOD responsibility. And two, working with the association, we have been trying to empower them in terms of reskilling, some through the Service Corps, I'm working very close with the Department of Labor. But the challenge again in terms of risking, okay, the Department of Labor would at least per member be able to say you've got 13,000, then to reskill the member in whatever direction the member wants to go. But the challenge with that reskilling is that people would not necessarily go for areas in terms of a skill which is needed in the market. They attend and then they get dependent, and then after that, we find that they are not necessarily employed. So working very closely with the association and our members, we have come to a situation where we say we want to make sure that in the marketplace what skills are needed. And then again, working with the Department of Labor, make sure that there are forms which members fill, assisted by their various associations, so that they can be at least directed in terms of reskilling. So that's what one would say in terms of the database. It is there, but it is not necessarily credible. A lot of things need to be done in that database. Then the issue of the CPR list. We've got that CPR list, and as one has indicated, it needs it again. People are challenging their years of service. Somebody says, no, I've been there, but the years of service are not necessarily correct. And again, working with the association, and the Honourable Deputy Minister has indicated, there are those
who claimed that they were not included in the CPR list. It is easy to go to the CPR list. We've got all those names. But then the question is, those who claim that they were not there, to verify the CPR list, we can make it available. But again, in the Act, the minister has been given a prerogative if somebody applies presently that the person submit. Then, if the person submit, all what is expected, if Mugwebi says, I was in the Transkei Defense Force, then there must be something which confirms that in terms of the commander, who was your commander, which year did you join, and then somebody at least must certify that. It is not only the member saying that I was there. There were structures, command structures in all the levels. So using those structures, then it can be confirmed that yes, this member was a member, and he did serve, and he trained this year, and he trained in that area. So that's the process we should follow in terms of making sure that the people at least are in the CPR list. That's the credibility of the CPR list. Then the last one which I will take is the question of the structures and the budgeting for the structures for the coming financial years. Honourable members, the restructuring of government departments is being done not only this Department of Defence and Military Veterans, and there's a process which is being followed under the auspice of the Department of Public Service Administration, where all government departments were required to look at the new functions and roles which they were given to make sure that they structure and at least a budget for that. The Department of Defense, through the Secretary for Defense, is also being informed by this process, submitted their work there, where provisionally it's being looked in that environment to make sure that whatever structures that the Deputy Minister has indicated, once we begin at least to move next year, with the budget, we can begin to put up preliminary structures which might be refined and probably the funding for the function being relooked. But yes, there is a provisional arrangement to make sure that the new structures can start functioning. I will stop at that, Mr. Minister. Thank you.
Thank you, General Mkwebi, General Fischer. Thank you, Honorable Minister. I think, firstly, the most of the questions about the how. Now, I think the problem in this regard is that currently as a task team, we're still looking at the what. We're still trying to put the framework in place, the structures in place, and also to identify the key elements of what we are about. Now, the how part of it, we haven't looked at it as such, because that is going to depend on the planning that will be done. And that planning will come about possibly once the structures and certain individuals who have been given the responsibility to look at what needs to be done, therefore, once that is done. So for now, I will ask the honorable members of the committee not to really ask us in terms of how certain things will be done, because we haven't looked at that aspect as yet. Secondly, on the issue as well of whether it will be correct to inform the member of the former member of the world, Second World War conflict, whether it will be correct to inform him that he will get the same pension as what is currently available, I think it may be unfair to do so as well, because like the Honorable Minister has said, that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. Firstly, like revisiting the HR policy of the Defense Force currently, because those pensions we are talking about, Honorable Member, were based on some of the policies. Now, there's a lot of work that we still needed to do to review what is currently available within our Defense Force in terms of, you know, retirement benefits. But what we are looking at as well is what is not there in terms of the members that were not accommodated and catered for, like those who are in the liberation, you know, struggles and so on. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of reviewing the current policy, reviewing the current schemes that are in place, and therefore making the necessary adjustments in that regard. So it is all the hows and the whens in terms of some of the questions that are asked. The third one, whether members will be treated equally, obviously in terms of our law and our constitution, all the members have got to be treated equally. But what we are going to be looking at, like the Honorable Minister has mentioned, firstly, it is a question of eligibility. Who are the members that are eligible, you know, to gain access to such benefits? And once that aspect of eligibility has been sorted out, then we have to go through the means test. Because the mere fact that an individual is eligible does not necessarily mean that that particular individual has got to gain access to certain benefits. Therefore, on the basis of the means test that will be conducted, a determination will be made what it is that certain individuals may be in a position to access. So those are some of the things also that related to the House. But as a matter of principle and in terms of our constitution as well, all members that are eligible will be treated equally, depending on other aspects as well. Now, the issue of fraudulent members who always claim to be veterans themselves, I think it's a matter we've been battling with since integration process. We are quite aware of the circumstances in our country of unemployment, where a lot of individuals will exploit any opportunity that arises. We are quite aware as well that as soon as this matter is resolved and a lot of people become aware that there are benefits if individuals declare themselves to be veterans, a lot of fraudulent elements will pop in from the woods and claim that they are veterans. This is precisely the reason why we conducted desktop studies. This is precisely the reason also why we paid visits to some of the countries to learn in terms of how these things were done. Like in Nigeria, for instance, they do have verification committees. People who are strictly looking at the issue of verification to determine the legitimacy of those who claim to be veterans. So we are going to put such structures in place as well so that we can really be in a position to flush out those fraudulent elements. Those are the answers I can give, Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, General Fischer. Is there any other? No. Thank you very much for those responses. Chairperson, Honorable Members, just to add on the information provided, to the information provided, and say that the question of gender in the policy with respect to support will be dealt with. It will be dealt with the
indeed take the comments, you know, made and, you know, share them with the minister, that we have not done well in that respect. The question about funding that the honourable member that Dame Langen is raising, it's indeed a big challenge. We're going to need money. The state is going to need the resources to provide for this population. That is the price the country, we want to believe, will be ready to pay for stability of this country going forward. That is the price we're going to have to pay, and it's a political decision that we must make. We hold back, we are grumpy about it, we must be aware of the consequences. As General Mokwape has said, that we're not just talking destitute of freedom fighters, we're talking about other problems which half the time are not in the radar screen, but emanates from this omission on our part. The problem of private armies, recruitment of former soldiers in South Africa who are fighting in other wars, in other countries, Iraq and so on, because those are the only skills these people have in life in order for them to survive, to put bread on the table, to kill, to fight. They are soldiers. Those are the skills they have, and those are the skills they will sell. If we don't provide them with other skills, if we don't provide programs that make them not to move in that direction, we can't, you know, divorce ourselves from the consequences. I'm just saying that it's a political, you know, decision. We can say we don't have resources, but there are consequences for us to stand taking that stance. We can say we don't have resources and have people who have fought for democracy, for freedom in this country, lying destitute, being given purpose. You know, these things will come back at us. So, I guess certain things, there's no big price. There's no price we can say is too big to pay, because we've got an obligation. Do we intend introducing a bill on military veterans? That's an appropriate and good question, and that I'm Langeni. The task team has done, and well, that work is not yet concluded, but we have started it right at the beginning of reviewing the current legislation. The view was that we should, when we are done with that full assessment, establish whether we need to amend the former Act of 1999, Military Veterans Act of 1999, or we must introduce a new legislation. That's one. But also there is a need for the amendment of the Defense Act. There's a need for the amendment of the Defense Act, not just in relation to military veterans, if we go in the direction of of having a separate vote department within the ministry, but also, you know, the question of the establishment of the remuneration commission. There are a number of these kind of measure interventions that are occurring within the department that are going to require the amendment of the Principal Act. The minister had ideally wanted to have this legislation dealt with this year, in this session of Parliament. But it has proved too ambitious. It has still proved too ambitious. It's proving visually impossible, but she still doesn't want to accept that it cannot be done now. I don't know what we're going to do. But there is urgency. The point is that there is urgency. However, the timelines that we have are not sitting, you know, comfortably with the pace at which certain things are going to be happening.
say in general, to restate and confirm the point that everybody who was a soldier and recognized as such in the by him meeting the definition that the policy is going to come up with, will be treated equally. Everybody, people are going to be treated equally. They'll be treated equally. However, bear in mind that every support, every benefit has its own means test. Every benefit, people will qualify for everything. They are treated equally for everything, but every support that people get, they must meet a certain means test. But equality is across the board is guaranteed. For instance, let me just say the issue of housing. The means test of housing may be such that the numbers of people who will come about the line will be of former freedom fighters for very obvious reasons. Because the other military veterans, those who were soldiers in, for instance, in the non-statutory forces, it may actually not constitute a huge problem, the problem of accommodation, the way it may be the case with the former freedom fighters. So the policy will be able to take care of this. There is a question about how the cascading, how are we going to work out into the policy a cascading scale with respect to qualification for benefits. That is a very technical matter. It's a matter for administrators. It's a matter for technocrats to fashion those kind of, you know, instruments. They know how. I don't think I could present any concrete form that is going to be used in saying how, what is the modality of that cascading that the policy will assume. It will be those who will implement the policy for them to come up with the modalities. But the principle, I think, is established. What money have we set aside for this? As General Mukwege has indicated, there will be money for the setting up of the department immediately. Although the budget may be limited, but in the adjustments we hope that were made, we hope to be able to get the department off the ground. The actual budget for the department, as Mr. Demnangen has correctly said, can only be factored in the next budget of 2010-2011. The CPR indeed will be subjected to, you know, not the CPR, but the disputes around who must be on the CPR or not will be subjected to the appeals, you know, to the appeals board. They will go to the appeals board. There is a question which Honorable Member Tolo raised. I don't know if I understood it properly, or the story you are relating of this individual was that you ended up in jail. But I thought the principle, if the principal issue that you are raising, that at all, is whether the dependence of this particular person who ended up committing crime because of the circumstance or the plight he was in, whether those dependents will be entitled to support. it's an issue. That issue does appear. It's going to arise under, you know, the articulation of eligibility. Whether people who have been dishonorably discharged qualify to be beneficiaries, or people who have committed certain categories of crimes would actually qualify to be provided with the support by the state. Because certain levels of crimes goes with power. If we say these people, the country is considering them for specific attention and support because they have served honorably, then you see you cannot undermine their status and their standing in the eyes of the public by bringing in people who are dishonorable, people who have committed murders and what have you. I just, you know, think it's something that is going to be a heated, you know, kind of, you know, debate about with respect to legibility. And once the principal, of course, is not legible, the dependents cannot be legible. But those are things that we need to agree on. Issues of, I won't comment about political partisanship within military veterans with respect to the things that you activities that the events you are referring to, but suffice to say that the SANVAT is very clear, the South African National Military Veterans Organization, which is an amalgamation of all of these military veterans associations that existed, that party partisanship, political partisanship is going to undermine cohesion within this association of military veterans. And we are very clear as a department that that if we continue with these military veterans associations that have amalgamated into SANVA, because as far as SANVA is concerned and its constitution, this is a unitary, you know, structure, it's a unitary board. If they continue with the political partisan, you know, activities, it is going to deprive the country, even the department, to tap into what we believe they are able to provide an example of the reconciliation, example of nation building that our country needs from so many of us. They, having been people who were at the coalface of the conflict of the past, they can become very resourceful individuals in educating the rest of us, the rest of the public, to say, you know, the future of the country lies in us belonging together. Preaching that reconciliation, but the importance of nation building, they are better agents for that because they were themselves at the very, you know, cold face of that conflict. So party, or rather political partisanship, we don't believe it will go, it will be a useful attribute for military veterans in this particular instance. The challenge of people who claim to be freedom fighters and so on has been answered. That will be the business of the appeals board to clear, you know, things like that. But the point that all of us were freedom fighters, not only those who were in exile and those who were in jail, all of us were freedom fighters. This question is what, in my concluding remarks, I was referring to say that we will, in our report, indicate that indeed many people deserve the kind of support that we are saying must be provided to military veterans. Can government look into it? How is it going to be done? What can be done? We'll flag that. Do we have the speech? to increase the tempo on this work, Honorable Member Mapel. I think the approach the minister has taken was really the most responsible way of cutting corners in setting up an organization in government within the Department of Defense and having policy of what support must be provided. Because things being equal, ideally, I would imagine the minister would have wanted to come up with a white paper. Have a whole, you know, period where it allows for policy discussion and inputs by members and the public and so on, and only after that move. That it went for the task team, they come up with recommendations on policy for me. That itself was an extraordinary way of I'm just saying that to manage public affairs, there are certain things that you have to just go through them. You can't go faster than. Responsibly dealing or doing things in ways that are appropriate. But we all are concerned about agency. And this task team, the minister said, must table this report by last week Friday. We have not sought to extend its deadline. We think within the next 40, we'll only go beyond the limit put with about 14 days that the report will be on the minister's desk. That's how desperately we are all trying to push. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Mine just a comment. Firstly, I wish to thank the Deputy Minister and the Minister in her absence, the work they've done in establishing this task team of the military veterans. That's very important. We've been waiting this situation for some time. Now, I am happy, I must say, but I'll be the subject of correction somehow. On a basis of the freedom fighters, for instance. Comrade, you will forgive me. I don't think that we were in South Africa, all freedom fighters as such. There were freedom fighters and the supporters of the struggle for freedom in South Africa. I think Minister, look into that. We cannot all of us be freedom fighters in South Africa. Freedom fighters, you know very well, are from the structural organizations. Even the First World War and Second World War were in these structures. So those in the First World War and Second World War, we appreciate what they've done. They defended this country against, for instance, the fascism and Nazism. That's very good. They, although it's not the way the people, the majority of the people of South Africa were thinking. However, the new strategy, tactics of the fighting for freedom that established democracy today. Majority of our people are enjoying this, even in this house, are enjoying these freedoms. It's nice to talk and it's hard to fight,
I know very well. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Deputy Minister, there is a point which I wish to raise so that this, in other words, I'm in distrusting in its deliberations, in the process. The question of a special pension which has been granted to the freedom fighters, which has to be embraced, is very important. But in its processes, legislation, for instance, it says is taxable special pension, but it's not taxed at the moment of delivering it to individuals who are getting it. Treasury accumulated this amount of tax at the end of the year. They sent the huge bill of that tax to individuals to pay. This is for those who are in government, for instance. I mean, myself. I was elected in 1994 after 8 years of the struggle, of my participation in the struggle. Now, we made, of course, I was demobilized. I was supposed to have gone to the camps, but I was demobilized. However, during the time or the period of applying for the ID, it's not me alone. Some members, as usual men, are kept things in their hearts. They don't take things. Their pensions are made to accumulate at the end of the month, end of the year, the huge bill comes so that you must pay. As some of us, myself, I spent so many years in a struggle, I have nothing. But the bill is there. If I don't pay that bill, I'm punishable. What is the punishment? Back to prison again. I'm supposed to pay 70 something thousand of which I don't have. I don't have. I didn't want special pension. I fought for freedom. When going to fight,
go slow.
I did not say I need any payments.
Okay.
I went to fight for the freedom of the people of South Africa. Not for myself, not for my family,
okay,
but people of South Africa.
Okay, then go slow now, Tata.
Now, okay. Okay, Chair. I know I may get out of the program, but I think I must cough this thing out of my mind.
Yeah.
Must cough it out.
Yeah.
If you stop me, you know, it's painful.
I think we have an opportunity.
I participated in the struggle. I have to pay money.
Yeah.
A lot of money, and I don't have it. So I have to negotiate through consultants. Please ask the treasurer, so that I pay little. Even that little, next another year, is accumulating time and again. Now, as long as I'm in government, that will continue. Now, I think now I'm in the testing to look into the situation. I think it's important. Honorable Chairperson.
Deputy Minister, and I wish to thank you very much.
We are fully protected against Duma.
No.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you to the Deputy Minister. I also wanted to talk about this CPR thing. I understand the answer that was given by General Mukwege in terms of the CPR list, that you can still go there and register, because there's quite a number of people that I know who are out of that list, and there's quite a number of people who are in that list undeservedly, you know. On the issue of the special pension, there are problems, hence the Honorable Diale is raising this thing that other people have to pay back the money every month, but they still receive the special pension. So I think with the work that we have done, Honorable Deputy Minister, those are some of the things that you should look into, because they are disturbing. And flushing out those who have benefited, who are not supposed to benefit from the firstly, for those who are in the CPR list, they need to be taken out and be punished for that. And those who are receiving special pension who are not supposed to receive it, they are supposed to go to jail for that, because they are known. There were investigations sometime 2 years ago. I don't know what happened to those investigations, because some were arrested, some are still roaming around our streets. The question that I want to raise is directed to the first and the second president of SAMHSA about the provincial launches or the provincial conferences. When are we going to have those taking place? Because according to the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999, it shouldn't only be SANVA nationally, it should cascade to provinces and also using the three spheres of government. My question also will be, how is it going to work in the provinces? The question of launching or conferences taking place, because premiers of provinces should be involved in making sure that those processes are taking place. So I don't know the leadership of SANVA, how far are they with those arrangements. The other question is, what will happen in the case of the children of those freedom fighters who left their children out of the country, who are still in Angola, Zambia, and many other countries? How will the whole process or the families of those who have passed on, knowing they know that there are kids out of the country, or their friends or their comrades, they know that there are the chairperson has left a child out there and they have passed on. How are we going to make sure that those kids are brought to their home country? Because they belong here. Thank
you for now, Honorable Deputy Minister.
All questions are directed to the Deputy Minister. He will then decide who answers. Can I come, David? I've taken note of the door. Come on, Fellow.
Thank you, Chair. I have three questions and then three follow-up questions, which arise from my previous three questions, which I do not believe were satisfactorily answered. First, let me start with the question.
They sabotage.
Yeah.
Are they sabotaging you?
Well, at least it's speaking to me.
Oh.
First, on the question of equality, Deputy Minister, do you believe that an indigent MK military veteran's claim to benefits is not superior and is in fact equal to, for example, an indigent World War II veteran's claim to benefits?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Then let me come to my that's a sharp answer. Thank you. Let me come then to the housing policy for military veterans, because it seems to me that's precisely what we do not have. The policy of the housing department is to provide preferential access to housing, not to all military veterans, but to some military veterans, described in their policy as military veterans of the struggle. And in this definition, that includes military veterans of MK, UPLA, and Azama. Now, do you think, in light of the principle of equality, the existing policy of the housing department in respect of military veterans is wrong? And if so, does your task team intend to recommend an alternative policy for military veterans in respect of housing? That's my question on housing. Then a question on a code of conduct. In your desktop studies and in the various cases that you have examined, has this task team considered a code of conduct for military veterans? I mean, the military, some members of our Defence Force have, during the course of this year, trashed the Union buildings. What if in the future groups of military veterans do similar things? Will there be a code of conduct for military veterans? And perhaps has the task team considered that if there's a breach of a code of conduct, certain benefits may be withdrawn? Then let me come to my follow-up question. First, in respect of the World War II veterans who wrote to me from Britain, I know that you're thinking that your task team are at a limiting stage, but is it at least the vision of your task team and the intention of your task team that a military veteran, a World War II military veteran, would receive a pension equal to the pensions of other military veterans, provided he passed a means test? So that's the follow-up question on World War II veterans. Correct. And I'm repeating it because I did not get an answer. Yes. I've in fact repeated the first question, which I did not get an answer to, with respect, sir. The second follow-up question, Deputy Minister, is in respect of data. What worries me is it seems to me that the task team does not have the basic data or will not share the basic data. The general, with respect to, said that we have, that he estimates that we have 20,000 military veterans, subject to the certain questions about the CPR. I accept that. But the question is, how many, for example, military veterans are receiving special pensions? How many and at what cost? How many military veterans have received housing benefits and at what cost? So it seems to me that we do not have the basic data, or the task team is not sharing the basic data with us. Now, my question to you is, do we have this data? And if we don't, I think that is a very serious problem. The third is the question of the budget. The elephant in the room here is, and my honourable colleague said, the intentions of the task team are good. But the elephant in in the room is the budget. Now, my question again, I mean, what is the budget in the Department of Defense over the next 3 years for military veterans? Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Generals, for your answers to my questions. Now, I realize you're at a you're part of an ongoing process and you may not know the final answers. I do thank you for the assurance of equality for all veterans, irrespective of which organization they come from. Now, I'm not quite clear on exactly who is on the CPR, but it would seem from the definition of beneficiaries that you give in this presentation that the CPR will have to be expanded to include other groups. And can you give me the position with regard to SADF national servicemen and members of the Cape Corps who would seem to fall within this definition?
Yeah, thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. Comrade Minister, just find out you and others here, you've been exiled. They will call units when you're going to fight in the bush there. You know better than I don't know. I'm just talking. I don't know. But my question is that, and there is some other people who get killed apart from soldiers those days. And you'll find those people, maybe they are not, they were young men, they didn't marry or woman or whatever. How they're going to benefit from these military veterans? Because according to me, they're very important. Because they give their lives about us. They will benefit and they are gone. How are we going to also make sure to I'm not sure their family also to benefit on that military veterans. Another question, Comrade Chairperson, is that appeal board, you know, I'm not sure appeal board. Is appeal board if you've done what? Maybe to just explanation to understand, because I'm looking at appeal board and advisory council and veterans organization, but I'm just asking on appeal board. And because I understand if you make appeal, maybe court, what, but in the military veteran, you can appeal if what is wrong, what. Thanks very much.
Give the veteran. That's Mlange.
We have been told that this is a preliminary report, and therefore we should not expect, for example, the Deputy Minister to be having an answer to all the things we have raised here. We should put them up as suggestions to this committee that in refining this, would like to take into consideration this and that and that and that. I think that is what we should be doing, because we know they've been told it's preliminary. They're still going to work on it. Let's make suggestions from us. This we think are some of the things that should be included in the report. Final this thing. For example, the issue of the gentleman who wrote to my honorable friend, Maynard, from Bodestag or whatever. I think you should reply to that person. Thank him for having written to you and telling him what the problem is which he's facing. Thank him for that. Don't promise him anything at this stage. But what you should be telling him is the government is considering very seriously reviewing.
Dr. Mlange, let's not start writing the letter now.
Pardon?
Let us not write the letter now. You've given him advice, he could take note of that.
I'm not saying you should write it now.
Director again.
No, I'm saying you should be saying such things to the gentleman. That's all. Thank you.
I'm just saying that you can also advise each other to finish here. don't want you to go.
Then Paga, you stop.
That's the opportunity I want to give to the deputy minister so that you can conclude. But you and many reporters.
You will say that he's not answered on some of
the things. No, don't worry. He's the deputy minister.
So I'm saying there are some of the things you should be saying.
No, that's fine. Give the deputy minister the chance. I know he's very capable of answering questions. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Dr. Mlangeni. Those were indeed wise words from a sage. You're right that we are here to hear views from committee members if they have specific views and opinions on any of the matters that we have raised here. This is what we want to hear. What are those views? And it is the responsibility of the task team, I mean of the committee, of course, to enrich the work that the task team is doing. You are absolutely correct. I agree. Chair, let me just start right away with the follow-up and clear what we said earlier on, where Honourable Member Menier feels her questions were not adequately responded to. Honourable Member Menier posed one question twice differently and believes it's the two questions. But his concern, I do understand, it's about equal treatment. And I thought I answered it. I said, yes, there's equal treatment. And I thought earlier on I said, yes, there's equal treatment, but he seemed not to be hearing this. And I think it says something about how we are positioned. You know, when we have a discussion, a dialogue, and you run into that kind of problem where the other person speaks, but you hear him, but you don't hear him. It's the way we sit in relation to the problem. And maybe I should go slightly further and say that the policy that we are going to recommend to the minister cannot but treat military veterans as equal beneficiaries. It cannot but treat them as equal beneficiaries, and it should, and it will. However, I want the members of the committee, of the portfolio committee, honorable members, for you not to lose sight of the context of the problem. The context of the problem, we should not even prevaricate about it. It is the destitute plight of people who were involved in the liberation struggle, who during that involvement could not put aside anything for their tomorrow. That is the essence, that's what sits at the center of the decision by the president to say the Ministry of Defense will not be the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans. It is not because there's been neglect of former soldiers before. And matter of fact, indeed, that was not the cause of this intervention. Why? Because former soldiers who were in statutory, who were members of the SANDF, were, yes, soldiers, yes, were doing a service to the old order, but doing that in conditions of normality of soldiers, drawing a salary and be able to, I would imagine, put something for their tomorrow in the process of that period when they were in service. Yes, they were soldiers, but they still had families. They could have houses and things like that. They would not have caused see, we're seeking to do what is a misreading of the problem. But that being the problem, that you have destitute people who are involved in the struggle who never put anything for themselves for tomorrow, is not seeking to extrude those who were in the statutory forces in the defense force from the second dwell door, the Korean War, and what have you, who may actually be in many ways deserving of support by the state because they were soldiers. That is why we say that this policy must actually, with respect to each benefit, look at the needs of a person. It does not go that because a person was a member of the SANDF who fought in what the Bush War in Namibia or whatever, may not have the need to be supported, that his dependents must have access to education. His kids must be, you know, assisted with education. It may not go that he himself may not need assistance with respect to whatever other training that he may want, in order to skill him to be able to eat a living in different ways. It does not mean that he may not have a need for health. It does not mean that he may not have need for transport, simply because he was a member of SNTF. All of these things he'll be assisted with, which presently as we speak, he may not be assisted. It could be that he's not being assisted with comprehensively. So that is the issue. So the point that I'm making is that if you like the policy, the way it's going to pan out, it will have some affirmative. There will be some affirmative action to the completely destitute, if you want to put me, for me to put it in those terms. It will have, it is affirmative in that, in the what is called cascading scale as informed by the extent to which people have been, lives have been disrupted. It speaks to that. It means that all the time there will be an affirmation of those who are more challenged. All the time, it will always be like that. So, I don't think, we are not providing clear answers to this. There is no discrimination. There is equality. But people, if you like, it will be from each according to his needs to each, from each according to his ability to eat according to his needs. There will be some socialism of sorts, if you like, in the manner in which the policy will try to deal with this. I'm saying, the policy is intended to assist people to the extent to which they are challenged because they were in the military. But there are people who were in the military and who were in the military under peculiar circumstances, non-statutory forces, being in the military, totally not earning any incomes, totally not having any, place of abode that they can, talk to. People who were living, life that was not making it possible for them to move on their own in the absence of the kind of support that they're talking about. There are people like that. Beyond that, I don't know what else can we say. But the point I'm making is that there's no discrimination, equality. But there is a need to look at what is it that the individuals at a specific individual level must be assisted with. And of course, as Ntate Mlangeni says, that the letter that you have, Mr. Mainir, you now understand what interventions we are talking about now. You are able to tell that particular person exactly in what terms, what is it that he can can't say, you know, it's a story you cannot communicate. You have a sense from the things we have said of what support those that person is going to be getting, because he is going to be getting support that now, as we speak, he does not. If he has, for instance, dependents who have children that he cannot take to school, this policy says, and that the minister, he means the minister, he'll be getting that. You know, those are the things that will be happening and accruing to individuals. The point about the code of conduct for military veterans association, that is a matter that we will not be able ourselves to speak on authoritatively, because the military veterans association and the military veterans association that we have as in the form of SANFA, it is it's an organization of beneficiaries, organizations of the affected people. It is them who must decide on how they run their institution. If they have a code of conduct, it is them that must come with it. We as military veterans, we will ascribe or subscribe to this behavior. And anyone who behaves outside of these parameters that we set for ourselves does not belong to us. It is for them to decide that. From the point of view of government, what we can talk about is a question of who is legible. And if the issue of honor comes in, as I said earlier on, it will come in relation to what has constituted these honorable actions or acts of that is honorable that makes a person not to qualify. But that won't be a code of, well, I'm not talking code of conduct, because code of conduct may speak to many other things. But government will address the issue of police will address the issue of honor and say person dishonorably discharged will not qualify or will qualify. And once we set that as policy, it will be a policy. It will be policy of government. So I think the distinction should be made between code of conduct for military veterans and what the in policy the government would put as a requisite or as conditions for an individual to be eligible for this kind of support. The point about the CPR list. Do we have we speak like we don't have data. No, we have data. We have data, but the data that we have is not conclusive. If we have done stock taking, as I reported under the status, things we have done to establish what the status quo is that we have checked the CPR list. We have checked the CPR list and we have been told that there was work done over a period of 3 years to try and consolidate the CPR list. However, there are still disputes around the CPR list. Among other disputes, there are individuals who say that I rightfully belong on that list. I was not on that list because at the time of the integration, I was not in the country. I'm a member of Mkhonto West, but between 1994 and 1996, when the CPR list was closed, I was out of studies. I got a scholarship and I was studying, and I only came back in 1998 or 1997. That is why my name is not on the CPR list. But the organization, that is MVA, can vouch that this person indeed is a trained member of Mkhonto West Sizwe. But during this period, he was on training or whatever, he was not in the country, and therefore, justifiably, must be on the CPR. And we are told there's about plus minus 500 names of people who issue of the Cape Coast Call, if I may speak to that point, you'd be aware that the Cape Coast Call, in our understanding, was dissolved before the integration by the SANDF. The SANDF, in our understanding, did not submit the Cape Coast Call as part of the contingents of the SANDF statutory forces to be integrated. Its members were paid off, kind of, in my understanding, given some land, some packages, because government of the day then had taken a decision that they would not be presented for integration. So they are not part of the CPR list, the Cape Coast Corps. Whether that decision taken by the National Party government to deal with the Cape Coast Corps in that way, it's a matter to be revisited. You want to revisit. It's what the cabinet will have to look into. It's not the task team. It is above, as a policy matter, what the task team can handle. But that's what I can say with respect to that. And there may be other kind of related, cases of categories of, you know, people who may have been, who say we should be on the CPR list, but we're not, and, you know, but that would need a political intervention. The task team does not have the mandate for any political interventions. Where these concerns are brought to our attention, we'll note them, and they'll be part of the presentation in the report. They'll be highlighted in the report for attention by cabinet. You see, the whole question about data, the data of military veterans, be aware that even as we got presentation from the, for instance, from the special pensions, division from Treasury, they were able to give us the whole list of people who have applied for special pensions. Those that were given special pensions now, 12,000 out of about 54,000 applicants that they have received, we have all that information. But to work out the population of military veterans that we're talking about here, you've got to factor in the people that we're talking about, the community of people who are members of the SADF, on the Second World War, Korean War, everybody. You've got to have that population. You've got to have the population of the TBVC state, former soldiers. They've got to be consolidated as well. So you're not talking about, it's work that must be done, and that's not the business of the task team now. It is business of those who will set out to implement, you know, policy, to get, you know, a team that consolidates the task, the CPR list, and to get disputes around the CPR list that are there referred to the appeals board, and then have the CPR list consolidated. It has been made clear to us in some of these visits we have had to say providing support to military veterans and establishing in government a kind of organization for their support, one of the critical things that you've got to be careful about and be alert to is is legible. It is one of the challenges of an intervention like this. Meaning the consolidation of the CPR list is a very critical task of this intervention by government, because to the extent that it has successfully everybody under the roof who must be taken care of, it will be seen as a successful intervention. To the extent that you are going to have people left out but on the sideways and who will be making noises that they belong, they have been left out, it is the extent to which the intervention will be discredited. So the whole point about the verification of beneficiaries, bona fide benefit and eligible person and who is not, it's an area to be dealt with diligently, because it will go a long way in terms determining the success of this intervention. What is the budget? Honorable Member Mainir, we can't at this point say what is the budget. It is not possible. The budget of what this Department for Military Veterans is going to need is first going to rely or to be based on how big is this population. And with respect to how big is this population, the issues that I'm talking about, who is there who was a former soldier of the SADF, from the Second World War, the Korean War, and all of that? TBC states, who is there? And of course, the statutory forces, the CPR, I mean, the CPR list, okay? And those within the statutory forces who says, we were left out. How many are those? It is only when that CPR list is consolidated that you can say, this is the size of the problem in terms of numbers of people. And on the basis of that, not until there is finality about what benefits, we go for pensions, housing, health, burials, education, training, not until you firm up these things, are you going to know how much, what money do you need? What money do you need for pet, I mean for housing, how much money you need to provide health, how much money you need to provide for burials, how much money what you need for transport, none of these things. You've got, it is only when the policy has been concluded that you can now quantify in money terms how much is going to cost. So we can't project now, I mean, how much we need. It is going to be a step to be taken once, you know, this work has been finalized. And of course, there is no money set aside in the MTF period for military veterans because it was not there. It can only come into the picture once these policy recommendations have been finalized and we know what are the things we want to do for people and how many are those people. What happens to people who have died in the struggle and who have dependents? When we listed benefits, there's somewhere we say compensation. That compensation, of course, we have not spelled it out. That compensation may include, among other things, compensation with respect to that kind of problem. The children of beneficiaries who may have passed on and who are not in South Africa, left in other countries. Once the beneficiary is recognized as a beneficiary, the dependents automatically qualify. Now, it is for somebody to provide that information to say that there are these dependents of so-and-so who is, according to your records, there and da-da-da-da, died and da-da. So those people, whether they're in South Africa, the dependents or not in South Africa, they qualify because that they qualify on grounds that the principal is entitled to that assistance. In life and beyond. In death. The appeals board, just to clarify, the appeals board is a body that will assist to look to take a second look at the applications that are made and that are turned down, to look at them again so that the applicant is given another chance to satisfy himself that he was not unfairly treated, and indeed so that where he was unfairly treated there can be, you know, a correction. That's what the appeals board that the dollar would be there for. The appeals board would, for purposes of assisting applicants who for the first time may have been turned down as not qualified because there are certain things that are discrepancies in their story. They can take the matter up and explain themselves better, and indeed it's quite possible that another set of people looking at the the story may actually come to a different conclusion. Chairperson, thank you very much.
No, so why I want to stop all of you. Because, correctly so, we said this is our first session.
We have said that this is the first session that we are taking up with the Deputy Minister. And it then means that we should prepare again to come back and ask him to come back to us. But if we want to deal with him exhaustively, it's not possible that we would get all answers today. I still want to... You see, the PRC has been dealt with by Parliament and has been adopted by Parliament in the Defence Committee with all the discrepancies that it was confronted with. Because the report that was given back to us a year back was to say that there are discrepancies, but the finalization of that particular PRC is very difficult because there are people or there is no information that is coming up to help. Every time they went to want to conclude it, new issues arising, and it's making it very difficult. So we then adopted it as it was, with all the issues that have arisen at that particular moment. Equally so with the problem of the Cape Corps. They had made presentations to us many times in Parliament, but because it is a political problem, as the Deputy Minister says, it's not an issue that was confronting. I mean, like, we had to make up our mind that what do we say? Because people were supposed to have registered the Cape Corp and have not complied with that. But at that level, we accepted that there is that type of development, and we didn't do much about it in that period. But what I want to say to honorable members is that as we proceed with the Deputy Minister more intensively over some time, we'd have to come back to some of the issues that we have to conclude as parliamentarians. And take decisions ourselves and contribute to the commission itself so that when he puts together his own package, we then put that package in some of the suggestions that we have as members of parliament so that what he takes to cabinet or takes to the minister is part of our contribution that we have. That's why I don't want to allow you to go on and on for a very long time because it then concludes, it makes it very impossible for yourselves to have a discussion amongst yourselves as members of parliament at some stage to reflect on the issues that are confronting the report itself. Take it that the Deputy Minister and his team has made a good contribution, has provided what we've been asking and looking for, that how much progress has he made in relation to the military veterans. All of us are saying that he has made a good progress as a start, but let's give him more opportunity, let's give ourselves more opportunity to have an engagement among ourselves, so that when we make our own contribution, some of the weaknesses that we could see, we could make some recommendation towards the Deputy Minister. Let's not use this meeting as a sole meeting where we want to have everything to be totally sorted out. It's not going to be possible. Can I conclude on that one, in that way? I just wanted to give Mr. Mlambo here. He's been like opposed to heaven.
I'm sorry.
Yes. By omission. Has made comments, he holds views, and those were not questions, and I think he was just sharing with us what he's thinking about some of these issues. When we said that we were all freedom fighters, that was the statement made by the Honorable Member Dodd. And the Honorable Member Diaz is contesting that. Not everybody was a freedom fighter, but I assumed that the statement made by Honorable Member Todd when he says that we're all freedom fighters, it was saying the resistance to apartheid, the resistance movement drew in a huge slice of our population. People were involved in boycotts and strike consumer boycotts and all kinds of things. Yes. And all of those citizens, they were fighters for freedom against apartheid. However, indeed, when we talk about the support that government is wanting to bring about, there is a deliberate attempt to say, whereas if we had money, everybody would be isolated, or I mean, say everybody who says, who were in this consumer boycott and we did this thing and others, whereas if the resources were there, government would not mind doing that. If they said, with the resources that we have, can we be allowed to look after those who at least were uninterruptedly involved in these activities for at least 5 years, you know, something like that. That, if you look at what the special pensions criteria is of eligibility, it seeks to say, of all these people who are actively involved against apartheid, at least can you allow us to say, those with this degree of involvement and upwards be the ones that we isolate for support. There's some kind of, line that it wants to draw. So, and organizations through which these individuals were acting and were involved in this work are the ones that provide verification. To say, we know that this person was in detention for an accumulative period of 5 years, this happened during this period, and so on and so forth. This organization provides verification of actually special pensions. I'm just saying that that's how this matter has been dealt. So what Nadia is saying, that we're not all freedom fighters, in that context, it is taken care of in that way. The issue of the tax on special pensions, I think that's what is being raised here. That the tax on the special pensions is so high that at the end of the day, people end up paying back to the receiver huge amounts that makes the difference very negligible. Is that the point? Yes, and I think it's something that the task team should, with respect to pensions, must of course take note of and bring into the report to say, tax on special pensions, the wisdom of actually taxing that pension when it's so meager, maybe we will have to be looked into. Mr. Mlambo said there are people who are on the CPR, on the special pension, who have been receiving special pensions. People who have been on the CPR list were not supposed to be on the CPR list. Those who are on the CPR list integrated and recognized, so it means that they were able to meet certain, to provide information that the body that was presiding over that process satisfied itself that they are bona fide. It would not be the intention of this policy that must be subject to review, it must be reopened, because I think it will be opening a Pandora box there. I fully agree that fraud must be punished. With respect, that is the CPR list. What I just said, just in relation to the CPR list, it's not the intention that the CPR list should be open, where names have been actually signed off as kosher. We are not saying that there must be a review process of all of those names. We are saying that we must look at those who are complaining that they are not on the CPR list, and they've been given a routine. In relation to special pensions, you are right, Mr. Mlambo, that indeed there is a lot of fraud. It's a massive fraud, and there's been investigations conducted around the fraud that has happened and that is still happening around the special pensions. Be aware that special pensions does not sit within the Department of Defense. It is under Treasury. So the inquiries and the investigations that I'm talking about, I am not there. We are, and we cannot speak about them, you know, in any authoritative way, and we cannot provide any accurate information here. But we know that there's been fraud around special pensions, there are investigations, and indeed people where it is established that they have done these fraudulent things will face, will have to face the consequences of the law. That is going to happen, we are told. The provincial launches of SANFA, the leadership of SANFA is here itself, but let me just say that SANFA's launch, of course the department came into it to assist, but ideally SANFA as a military veterans association is a phenomenon that should have come up on the, out of the own initiative of military veterans themselves, out of former soldiers themselves. Because it is an organ that sits outside government that intends to protect the interests of a particular constituency. So, and to protect those interests even against government, meaning when government is actually not providing the support that it wants. So if government takes responsibility for forming up such a body, an organ of civil society, it may actually be not, it may not be the most desirable thing, but with respect to the national structure that we have, it was correct that the department should come in and form it. Going down, I'm not sure if we'd want the premiers to be forming, to be coming in there forming SANFA, but the leadership will say something from where they sit with respect to that matter. Just after I finish, I'll allow them to just say something about the provincial launches. Well, I think I've covered everything, if I'm not making a mistake. Thanks. Yes, Colonel Judge?
Thank you, Chair, and to the committee. There's definitely, the intention is there for SANFA to actually have the regional and provincial structures. But there is a question of funding and getting everybody together. And I think that's got to be part of the whole discussion, and whether we get totally recognised by government and by the department as well as a, as an organisation. I think one has got to understand the importance of SANFA, that there are very few organisations in South Africa where we have brought everybody together, and this is people who have fought on either side of a, an armed struggle or in any relationship, private or political, brought them into one organisation, and I think it's very important to keep that, that organisation together. And I think you brought up also the code of conduct. We have asked for a workshop where we are going to bring everybody together in SANFA to actually say how should each one of the member organisations act, and if one steps over that particular line, then we can actually react to each other. So there are times where we would like to speak out against one of our members, but I think it's something that we formed this partnership. We need to find how do we work together to actually make it happen. And if I may, just on the database one, it is very difficult in a situation that we've had at the moment of the socio-economic environment. It has not been conducive to a lot of people to say, I am a veteran, and I'm talking predominantly of the people that were SADF. And there is a lot of assistance that is given by regimental associations, by NGOs, by organizations who are totally outside, and we are not in touch of each one of those as to who they are actually helping. Only when these benefits become real from government that there are possibilities. are people actually going to come forward and say, I'm still alive, or this is what has happened, etc. And I think we've got to allow for that, but that's part of the what's going to happen later. And just on the SACC, they have been members of the CMVO, which is part of SANRA from 1976. The national body has been recognized by them since that time. The SA Legion has worked with them since 1921. The problem that we've got is that the national body, the SACC Regimental Association, did not have the funds to keep the 67 branches going. You now have the situation where branches are now saying they are national bodies, and that is where the problem is. So they are represented at this stage at SANBA.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. Just to add on the issue of the SANBA launches, I think the first problem here is that SANBA currently has got a problem in terms of its status. It is not an entity that is legally recognized, say, by law or by government. It is an entity that was created on the basis of an agreement between the veterans associations themselves and the Directorate of for Military Veterans Affairs, that is the SANDF. Secondly, I think there's a problem also with the military veterans associations themselves, because one of the problems we encountered in some of the provinces, we found that the associations themselves were fragmented. If I may make an example, such as in the Free State, we found that there were about three MK structures that claimed...
As long as you don't go on for a very long...
Yeah, I won't be long.
I don't understand to start discussing some.
Yes, I won't be long. I'm just clarifying. Yes. So those are some of the problems that were there, but it's a matter that we're currently trying to address, which will be sorted out as soon as possibly can.
I am going to encourage members to interact with you, provide more information on the issues that are related to those bodies. I don't want to open that on the basis of the Deputy Minister making a presentation on military veterans. Then it takes the focus away, and then I start discussing the entities that's supposed to have members have informed themselves long ago around those particular issues. I really want to still encourage you members to accept the report of the preliminary report of the Deputy Minister and give yourself another opportunity to come and engage with him at some different time. We will definitely invite him back again, but I also want you to have an engagement amongst yourself as members of Parliament when it comes to this particular. Now they can hear you, Mr. Okay. Now what I'm saying that I want to close this session, that I'm not going to have any problem with the theater now. Now what I'm saying is that I want to encourage members to have a different opportunity where we are going to engage amongst ourselves and look into some of the outstanding questions or some of the outstanding issues that are confronting us. But also to begin making suggestions to what has been put in front of us as a preliminary report by the Deputy Minister, so that this is not seen as the only and only session that we'll ever have with him. He will come back to us and engage us. I know that we are going towards closure of Parliament. Mamu Monica, we're still waiting to have the generals coming around here. Oh, you don't know? You're crazy, it's okay. No, we would want to do that. Okay, fine. Chairperson, just to
reinforce the point you're making by saying that in the things we said as far as process is concerned, we indicated that there is a workshop of stakeholders that has been organized for. Just to say that workshop is happening, by the way, this week on Friday, and my assumption is that the committee has received an invitation to that workshop. It's taking place in Irene, in Pretoria, of stakeholders. So the committee... the point you are making, Chair, that there is still an opportunity for committee members to make inputs, that those who are representing the committee at that workshop, they'll have the opportunity to engage with other, people who are in the military environment, who
are going to be at that workshop and would assist further, you know, consolidate this work.
We haven't yet received the invitation, but we'll take it up in the necessary channel. David, I want to close now, please. No. Don't encourage all of you not to make comments, because when you make comments, that will open me up for another question, you see. Then I can't close the meeting. But let me, honorable members, thank all of you for being part. No, there's no fight there. Look at him, how he's looking. No, it's fine. I'm just saying that let me thank all of you for coming to the meeting. And let me thank also the media people and the different officials that have been here. Can we thank you, Deputy Minister, for being able to honor your word that would ever come back to us and come and give some explanation and some report about the work that you are doing. We are really thankful to you and everybody that has been here. Can I say thank you, members, and have a good day. Thank you.
Chairperson, once again, and members, thank you very much. I was just going to say that to Mr. Menir, if he's got further issues that he wants clarified, we can have a discussion outside the meeting. It's not a problem. Thank you.